You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Moment segment later up in this episode. Today's episode, part two of a mailbag. So many questions. You guys really like hearing my thoughts about the Miami Heat, and I am extremely grateful. You sent in a bunch of great questions, some of you via Twitter, some of you via email, lots of different options, and I just wanted to address them. Some of them, you know, worthy of long conversations. Others I can just only hint at. But I still, again, appreciate all of your comments and feedback. So much of it is, again, during this weird time in the offseason for Miami anyway. Obviously, the finals are still going on. And impressive game one. If you haven't seen that, you absolutely should. Phoenix looks a lot more dominant than I would have given credit for. And while a lot of people are saying now it's a likely sweep, we can't discount exactly what the Bucks have done. A lot of people are saying, oh, they shot poorly. Giannis was struggling to some degree, etc. But we saw that play out, unfortunately, against Miami, where they struggled in game one. And then, well, we all know how that ended. In any case, this first question comes in via email from L. Parker. Two things, he writes. The Heat won't get better until Miami gets a natural score. Bam and Jimmy are not scorers. They have to work too hard to score the ball. And second, I don't think Pat Riley is being held accountable enough for some recent moves. His choice not to bring Brett Crowder threw the whole team off, and watching Trevor trying to finish at the rim was almost laughable. I just hope there is a better plan this offseason. So let me start off with the second part first. I talked about Jay Crowder in yesterday's episode. So, Parker, hopefully you went and checked that out. And if you didn't, I mentioned that Crowder himself probably not such an incredible game changer. We don't know exactly how erratic his shooting might have been at several points throughout the season, but just say sufficiently enough because he would have been a consistent lock at the four position. It certainly would have been a great help. And moreover, I think there is a need for bringing back locker room guys that fit well, that embrace their roles and things of that sort. And that's certainly something that Crowder provided that, say, Mo Harkless did not, or other players, like even Ariza did not. So I think Ariza is a fine player, obviously an older veteran, but I still think he has something to give. It's just not enough at this point for what Miami needs. They still have a hole at the four. Whether or not that is a natural score, I don't think that's likely either. So that's debatable. You would always like to have, Parker, a go-to score. And I see your point in that it's not Jimmy or Bam. That isn't to say that either of them can't be that. I just think it's not a role that they naturally embrace. Both of them much more prominently as playmakers. And I think you're also looking for, somebody to step up in key situations. Jimmy has done it. Bam has done it. So we know that they're capable of doing that sort of thing. But I think it also speaks to something that we keep talking about. I keep talking about on this show. I think as a nation of Heat fans, we all keep discussing the possibility of the point guard position. I brought it up on this show before. Guests have brought it up on this show. People are talking about it on Heat Twitter. And I think, again, as I mentioned yesterday in that episode about Bam and whether or not he might continue to develop next season, what his stat line would be was the specific question. But I talked about the framing of the roster and how that changes Bam's role. It's all about having a playmaker there, somebody who was not on Miami's roster last year. Tyler thrust into that role, wasn't able to handle that responsibility as easily, as naturally. I think more of a scorer's mentality from him, and I think we've seen that throughout his career from high school to his 1 year in Kentucky and through two seasons in Miami. He's not your typical playmaker. Goran can't handle that responsibility, but a little slower, a little worn down by age. And also, I think not naturally his role either. I think he's much more of a scorer, certainly for none. While we saw flashes, and we've seen flashes from all these guys, they can all make plays, but I think they don't do so as naturally. Jimmy does it much more naturally to me. I think he's much more willing to give up the pass, to make the right play for others, to see how the game plays out in such a level, which is why when he came back from injury and COVID and everything else that impacted him earlier in the season, he made such an incredible impact, not just defensively, but offensively because of his playmaking. Slowed the pace down, saw things progress out on the floor in a way that only a guard or a playmaker can. And I think that's what we're talking about here. You have playmakers at the center spot. You have a playmaker at the ostensibly the three where Jimmy plays, although he kind of varies in his role, whether he's a shooting guard or a four. He guards all players, so it doesn't really matter what your position is. But you need somebody out there who is a much more natural playmaker. And I think that's what's missing. Again, ideally, I think Kyle Lowry is the target for Miami. You could think to yourself that maybe you could possibly get a guy like Bradley Beal, although just fresh off a conference call from Las Vegas with Team USA, I saw Bradley Beal talking about Jason Tatum and made the tweet that I think the dream of Beal to Miami is dead just because of the connection between those two players. Having played together in high school, I think there's a shared history and background there that makes it a very strong potential that Beal would look to join the Boston Celtics at some point, and they probably have a better package of players and picks to offer in exchange for a trade for Beal this upcoming offseason or during the season at some point. So to me, the Beal dream seems unlikely. The Lillard deal always seemed unlikely to me, and even less so now. So I think if you're looking at a potential star that you can bring in and add to this Heat roster, it's probably Kyle Lowry. I think he can finish at the rim, he can draw fouls, he can play defense, he makes plays for others, slows the pace, controls how the play shapes up, how the offensive is run. I think it's such a great boost to have a player like him with his championship-level experience. You're talking about a locker room guy. I think nobody ticks as many boxes from Miami as what Kyle does. Leadership, experience, championship experience more specifically, playmaking, scoring, three-point shooting, veteran presence, all the things that Miami needs this offseason and values in general, that's what Kyle Lowry has. So I think more than a natural scorer like Beal, I think you'd probably prefer having a guy like Lowry on this roster because, well, he'll make everybody else on this roster better. You think it's easier for it's easy for Tyler to get those shots going now. Wait till he has a guard like Lowry to get him going. You know, similarly with Jimmy and his off-ball cutting. Similarly with Bam and his role around the basket. All of their offense will flow much more smoothly when you have a guy like Lowry on the floor. We're seeing it currently with the Phoenix Suns and Chris Paul, and I think it's worth just keeping that in mind whenever you consider what Miami is missing. And I think, again, I've been beating this drum for a while now. I think lots of people have been talking about it, and it's worth just remembering how important it is to have a playmaker. A scorer will come. I think you have enough guys who can average 20-something points per game. I think, well, you'd love to have a guy who can go off for 40 or 50 on any given night. That might be Tyler. I think he could eventually fill that role. He still has the potential. If you haven't heard from my episode from a couple days ago, I talk about Tyler, why I still think he'll be part of this team moving forward, and I think he has that potential given all the things that we've seen from him. And I think, you know, we on his conference call yesterday from Vegas as part of the USA men's select team, he talked about wanting to shut down the naysayers, that he didn't regress, and it's kind of all the things that I've been talking about and that I think a lot of Heat fans have forgotten, is that he is still very much the cocky, aggressive, swaggy guard who can put the ball down and get you a bucket. He can get you that bucket. Maybe he doesn't have the ability just yet to be a prolific scorer, but he'll get there. He's 21 years old. Bradley Beal is smaller than Tyler Hero. And he's still a guy who can get you that bucket. Yeah, of course, he's quicker. Maybe he's got a little bit more longer reach or anything like that. But I think overall, Tyler just doesn't have the opportunity yet. He will have it as he continues to age and evolve and grow. And he's going to do so this summer. And I think his conversation yesterday to media is still my ultra moment of the week there. Because to see Tyler handle the pressure from this offseason, all the talk about, you know, he's going to get traded, that he's washed, that he's diminished, that he's regressed. He seemed, you know, genuinely not upset necessarily, but he bristled at the comments. I didn't regress at all. And I think that's something that we all have to consider. And moreover, He really seems to enjoy this process of being there among the nation's elite. I think he's one of the best players in the country, one of the best young players in the country, and he'll continue to shine if he's given the opportunity. So don't lose hope yet. There's joy from him. There's happiness. There's enjoyment, just like when you're sitting back and enjoying a nice cold Michelob Ultra. So go make sure that you check out all the other exciting Ultra moments. Use the hashtag Ultra Moment. And remember, when it comes to a Michelob Ultra, it's only worth it if you enjoy it, but at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's a lot easier to enjoy. Enjoyment might not be the end game, but it is the whole game. Miami Heat are out of the playoffs, but the road to the final still continues, and our coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Again, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. This next question comes in from my friend Pete. He writes in, Tyler Hero is a bargain. Duncan will find another suitor. Probably. Kyle Lowry is our must-have whale, as I mentioned. And we must re-sign Josh Richardson and Trevor Ariza. What do you think about a trade for Porzingis? Well, Pete, I talked about this in an episode, I think last month. Yeah, it was during early June, right after the Heat season had ended. And there was a lot of talk about Porzingis not having a comfortable role in Dallas. We've seen since then some incredible reporting on the rampant dysfunction in the Mavericks front office. Of course, Rick Carlisle no longer there. Donnie Nelson, the general manager, gone. They have been replaced by Jason Kidd and other cohorts of owner Mark Cuban. Of course, there is a presence in that front office that is somewhat divisive and has led to some friction with their superstar Luka Doncic. But not only that, Porzingis never quite the player that his contract warrants and looking for a expanded role, I think. But the problem is that contract. And so while I do think that Porzingis might add a lot of the skills and he might fill a lot of the gaps that you might need in terms of a floor spacing big, a guy who can block shots, who can be a rebounder slash deterrent at the rim, not physically overpowering, would probably improve, I think, in Miami. I think they would take him and mold him a little bit more to a more typical four spot kind of guy who can, again, at 7'4", stretch the floor. But there's a huge history of injury there. I think when you start to see bigs like Bill Walton historically and others throughout NBA history that have feet, lower leg problems, things of that sort, those don't tend to go away. Those only magnify with time. I am highly dubious that Porzingis will be a long-term player in this NBA because of the constant injury, because there's always going to be the possibility of him missing a significant amount of time with just a bone bruise here or an ankle injury there. These things tend to pile up again. I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one on this podcast, but I still just, again, have seen enough of this play out throughout my time watching and following the league that I think it's a genuine concern, especially if you're getting paid the exorbitant amount of money that he is. So while I like the fit in Miami and I think there could be a role for him or a player like him here, I would stay away from that. Just because I think he wants the role of a number one type player. He's not going to necessarily embrace taking a backseat to superstars like Jimmy and Bam, who, by the way, as a total aside, are hilarious in the latest Jungle Cruise commercial from Disney. I'm never a big fan of cross-marketing promotions and things of that sort, but let me tell you, I mean, seeing Jimmy and Bam, you know, that was hilarious. That was great stuff there. I don't know if you all agree or disagree, but I enjoyed it immensely. Anyway, to back to the Pete's question there, I just don't think Porzingis is a likely option. Somebody like that certainly makes sense. And I don't know that there are a lot of players like that available. I haven't even looked at free agency and things of that sort yet, although that's, you know, take some time. I'm sure that there are players out there, probably older vets that might fill that role, but will probably be significantly cheaper and might fit into what Miami's capable and looking to do next season. I don't think Porzingis is the guy that you want to attach your future to. You know, you've got Jimmy and Bam already making a lot of money. If you're going to give up, you know, a prolific shooter like Duncan Robinson, who is a durable workhorse and is going to be much more likely to put up big shots and capable of shooting and stretching the floor as well as he does, I just don't see why you'd want to devote even more money. Like, he's going to get paid, I mean, $20 million a year, let's say, on average, but that's significantly less than what Porzingis is due. So No, thank you. If you're gonna bring in wings like Josh Richardson that can find a way to play a role in this team, and again, I talked about that in another recent episode as well. I still think that you can build this roster differently. Look, there's a lot of holes here to fill, but I do agree with you, Pete, that I think Kyle Lowry is likely your best option just because he brings some versatility. He is a guy who can do a lot of things offensively and defensively. I think he's at that right stage there, but look, we're all assuming that Lowry to Miami is a done deal. I'm not quite there yet. I know that there's things to consider. I think, you know, you have to consider one, that Kendrick is likely to leave. Kendrick Nunn, that is. That Goran Dragic has to opt out of the team will not exercise that $20 million option on the second year of his deal. And that Goran re-signs here at a much more team-friendly deal because he's happy here, because he likes his role here, because he wants to stay and he wants to keep his family happy in South Florida. All things that I think are likely to happen, but not a guarantee. We don't know that for certain. So given that, you might not have – right now you have a glut at the guard position of one-dimensional players. If you lose Nunn, if you lose Duncan, if you trade Tyler, if you – you know, if Goran doesn't re-sign here, all of a sudden that seems like a much more pressing need, and I don't know if you want to necessarily invest X amount of tens of millions of dollars in Kyle Lowry. Again, all supposition here. We don't know what Kyle wants in terms of contract. We've heard some rumblings that he wants somewhere close to a $25 million per year deal. That still seems pretty unlikely. I know this is his last best chance at a payday, that he didn't get those kind of opportunities earlier in his career when he was traveling from Houston to Memphis and he couldn't quite find a role. Now he's at that point in his career, again, a championship-winning guard, an established veteran, an all-star, an Olympian, all the things that you want out of a player, and maybe he likes the opportunity to get one more big paycheck in there. And then I don't know if that's in Toronto. I don't know if that's in LA, although we hear rumblings that they're looking to acquire Kemba Walker. I'm not sure where that is. Is that Philadelphia? Only if they trade away Ben Simmons. You know, again, a lot of different dominoes have to fall in their respective baskets. Shout out Wes Goldberg, because I just don't see that. It's just as done a deal as we like. The fit is magnificent. It just seems like it's a perfect match there between his temperament and everything that he brings to the table. It would be perfect for Miami. I also just don't see it's likely to happen. I've got a question that's coming in from Darius via email. He writes in, this one was sent in via Twitter. I'm convinced Kevin Love on this team is the perfect fit next to Bam, especially a motivated Kevin Love. What do you think? I'm not going to touch this one just yet, Darius. I will say I am a fan of the move. Some conversations I've heard going around the league is that a buyout seems to be in the future for Kevin. And if that's the case, then we'll see what happens. We've seen him already speak highly of Bam Adebayo in a recent press conference, again, from Las Vegas for Team USA. So there's reason to think that there could be a connection there. I like the fit with Love. I've also seen some people reporting that Portland, where Kevin is originally from, is a good place to land him. But I'm not so sure about that either, again, because they have a number of players at the four spot there. They've got a tough fit. They're looking to make moves of their own there. If they do wind up sending out Dame Lillard for Ben Simmons or CJ McCollum for Ben Simmons or anything like that, how do they add or incorporate Kevin Love? It just does not make a lot of sense. So we'll see. It could be very likely a Blake Griffin type scenario, something to watch out for later on in the season. But a lot of good things there. I do like the fit, and I'll definitely talk about that in an upcoming episode. But right now, I wanted to mention a little bit more about Rock Auto, because again, if you're looking for parts for your car or truck, then why bother going to a chain storefront trying to find out the part that you might need? You talk to a salesperson there, and this isn't a knock on them, but look, you know, they've got a dozen customers that they got to deal with at any given time. They got to look for a part up on their computer. They might not have the time and luxury to look up the part that you need specifically, and they just might quote you anything. It might be more expensive. It might be less expensive if you're lucky, but how likely is that? And so if that's the case, why bother going through that when you've got access to computers at home or in your pocket, which means you have access to a family-owned business dealers that's been serving customers online for 20 years. That's rockauto.com. They've got everything you need with just a few easy clicks. It's easy to find on their website. You go, you place your order, you have it delivered directly and safely to your door. Why bother going anywhere else or dealing with the possibility of higher prices when rockauto.com's low prices are the same for everybody? So right now, if you go to rockauto.com and get the parts that you need for your car or truck, you order them, then you go to the section that says, "How'd you hear about us?" and you write the phrase "Locked On," so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Starting July 19th, the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 is presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA experts Brian the White Mamba Scalabrine and former Phoenix Suns general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On NBA local experts will make selections and trades for your favorite basketball teams throughout this week-long special event. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. You know, I don't know if I necessarily missed the draft. Kind of feels like Miami, if they had a draft pick this season, they'd probably trade it for a superstar or include it in a package for a superstar, because I think that's closer to the timeline that they see themselves at. And so, you know, kind of feel like I'm missing out on the whole opportunity. I've heard a lot of people talk about this draft. It's really deep, and you've got a lot of great players earlier top. Even last year when the draft was weak, quote-unquote weak, turned out that they had a lot of good rookies that were able to find their roles and contribute. And I think you start to see that players may not necessarily be further along in terms of development, but I think the coaching and the understand the awareness of a system and what's required of a player, while you're not going to necessarily get a generational type superstar right away, the opportunity to add a plug and play player that will contribute to a high level seems much more likely. Because again, I think you got years, maybe even in some cases a decade or more experience at AAU level of basketball. You're getting coached up regularly, a lot of experience there. You understand how it works. You go, you have a familiarity with these guys. You put in off-season work with trainers and everything else. And well, next thing you know, you might be a 21-year-old, but all of a sudden you're playing 25 to 30 minutes per game and you have an opportunity to shine at the highest level. So it's interesting. And look, I mean, Europe has been doing this for years. The knock on Luka Doncic, it seems very, very odd considering he's a European player and he's young and everything else. Oh, he didn't go up against, what, a kid who plays 1 year at Duke or Kentucky? That, I don't understand it. There was a lot of hesitancy about whether or not Doncic was a realistic, you know, number one overall pick. Didn't wind up getting selected number one overall, obviously, but very deserving of that selection. And being held against him was the fact that he was young, or that he only played in Europe. I think the gap is closed, and I think it's important to consider that. Like, even watching Team USA scrimmages and watching, you know, video of them rehearsing and practicing and everything else like that, I'm not convinced that they're going to go and mop the floor. They're going to have a couple of blowouts because it's the USA, and I think that it's a great collection of all-star level talent. But they'll go in there thinking you're going to knock off great European teams very easily. That's just unrealistic. And so always something to consider, that the gap is closed, that players are getting better and better all around. And kind of speaking to that, this next question comes in from Hayden. He writes in, "For whatever reason, I went back and had a look at some of the games from last year's bubble, probably to remind myself that Tyler Hero is actually a good player. I got a vibe through whilst watching that the actual games were played at a higher level than the current playoffs. So quick and smooth, even games that weren't involving Miami. Would it be fair to say that the quality of play from the bubble was better than the current playoffs, or do I just have my heat-tinted glasses on?" Hayden, I think that's entirely fair. I've mentioned that point many, many times before. It just seemed like, even I remember, and this kind of going back a little bit, take a walk with me right down memory lane here, as you know, after the season ends abruptly in mid-March. And, you know, even as a media person, I'm trying to produce content, trying to stay in touch with the team and players and things of that sort. But there's this growing sense of dread, not just about the NBA, but in life in general. And then everything kind of just everything seems falling apart. There's protests around the country. There's a growing divide. There's the politics of the nation splitting everyone apart. There's an election taking place in a few months. And the fact that, unfortunately, and more importantly, that thousands of people are impacted by COVID, even to the point of death. So there's a lot going on there that's very, very negative. And then we start to hear more and more buzz about the bubble and the possibility of forming elsewhere. And I remember even having this an early thought to myself, is like, why couldn't you have it in Orlando? A place that I've covered basketball, they have the Junior NBA World Tournament there, the World Championship, I think is what it's officially called now. But I've covered that where they have teams from all over the world there on the Disney campus. And I thought to myself, that makes a perfect amount of sense. And of course, a friend and fellow writer, Keith Smith from Yahoo Sports, writes about it and then starts to grow more and more buzz. The league starts looking into the specifics of it. And of course, by, I want to say late May, early June, there's a plan in place. It all starts rolling together. 400-something page document of protocols of what it entails and what players have to do and everything else. And, of course, everybody's scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. But they all converge in Orlando in July. There's the 8 seeding games in early August, and then the playoffs kick off in earnest, of course, after the play-in tournament, which I think is going to be a part of the league moving forward. And I'm all for it because it's fun and exciting and makes things much more interesting. But when the games start to play, and I'm not just talking about the play-in tournament or those 8 seeding games where Phoenix wound up going 8-0, where Miami kind of struggled to find their role. But once the playoffs kicked in, to Hayden's point, absolutely much more fluid. And I think it's something to consider. Everybody likes dismissing NBA players because they're spoiled, right? Because they're soft, because they complain about wear and tear, because they complain about rest and things of that sort. Well, I don't know how you all feel about that, but I will always defend NBA players and the reality of their lives being very difficult for them. Because, yes, while they're paid an exorbitant amount of money, and maybe you could just say, oh, shut up and take it because you get paid a lot of money, the reality is also that we want them to play their best. We want them to be as good as can possibly be. And regardless of how much money they get paid or don't, and remember, not every player gets paid like a superstar level player. And if that's the case, what are you asking for a guy who's on a G League contract? Should Max Strus, or Gabe Vincent have to go through the same rigors while they're making, $50,000 a year on their one-way contract? Is that fair then that they should go through waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning for COVID tests and then not being able to go out at night, not being able to see friends or family, not being able to travel and go out and explore the city as part of, your NBA contract? I don't know. Anyway, more to the point, as far as the bubble is concerned, the lack of travel, the fact that there was a dedicated place to rest, the fact that I think that also you could focus not just exclusively, but primarily on basketball, that was the main point of your focus, of what you were trying to do as a player, I think that all lent itself to a much more improved product. So I agree 100% that the games were better. The shooting was better overall. I think the fact that there weren't fans in the arena can't sway officiating. Look, I think we can all agree that officiating is very difficult. I think we don't give referees enough credit, and I'm not saying that they are certainly faultless, but I think their jobs are extremely difficult, and I think they are human beings that get swayed all too easily by loud crowd noises. They all have some ego to them as well. They all, I think, want some attention for themselves. I think this is just normal. I don't think it's ever quite as bad or egregious as you might think, but we've seen games defined by officiating during this year's playoffs, and I don't think that was the case necessarily last year because there wasn't enough home cooking. There wasn't enough home crowds there to cheer, to sway a referee's decision. You make your calls in this empty arena that was dark for the most part, and you were just focused on the game. And maybe I'm exaggerating things. I'm not an NBA referee, nor was I one in the Orlando bubble last year. But again, to Hayden's point, and something that I've brought up many times before, I just think the games were better. They flowed more efficiently. They were just smoother. They just felt better. I don't know why. Again, maybe it was because there was a lack of basketball for such a long time, and watching playoff basketball again seemed to give me hope. The fact that you could watch a game at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon and watch 4 or 5 games in a row, that was great after months of not watching the sport. And maybe it was just that positivity that kind of carried through. But overall, I remember thinking to myself at that point in time that the games were much better, to the point that even when this season started, the games seemed a lot worse. There were a lot. Remember this. Miami was a victim to a couple, but they were rampant throughout the league. 30, 40-point blowout losses because there was just this weird footing, the short offseason. Teams hadn't played since March, and all of a sudden were being asked to resume regular basketball activities in December. It was not the smoothest product. It did not roll out as easily as it should have, as smoothly as the NBA and fans wanted it to. And I think it was a little different, a little choppier. And I think we're starting to see the toll of this weird season impact the overall level of play. Look, I still think a lot of these games have been fantastic, a lot of fun. But I agree with Hayden, not as smooth, not as fluid, and perhaps as aesthetically pleasing as last year in the bubble. But, you know, that's my point. Agree or disagree, send something in via email. You can always reach out to me via direct message. If you want to send out an email, do so at lockdownheat@gmail.com or always use the hashtag AskLOHeat on Twitter. And be sure to follow the show if you haven't already and leave a review. Special thanks to all of our sponsors for supporting today's episode. But thanks to all of you most of all. I'm David Ramil signing off for now.